The opinions expressed on End Time do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Impro Mafia, but just because I'm wholly accountable for my actions isn't going to stop me. Impro Mafia presents End Time!
This is the final part of the Impro Mafia Christmas Party special.
And now on to Mike Griffin, Impro Mafia's nobody.
Look, I got a one vote last year for Mike Styles.
I voted for you this year.
Oh, thank you.
Mike Skills / Styles.
Yeah, no, I used to be Mike Skills, which was an awesome nickname, until a year ago when I got no votes for anything except for Steve Martin, who voted for Mike Styles. And thus a new name was created, my fashionable friend Styles.
Much to the horror of Adam Styles. Hello, Amy. I'm glad you're still around.
There was a line to the toilet and I was bored.
I feel less excited about your presence all of a sudden.
Greg gave me a snake as I went into the bathroom. It was very strange.
That's sexual.
Yeah. I mean, tumescent penis, yes.
7 hours of
You were quite early, so you're cognizant. Relatively. This motherfucker.
Hey, that was good. I provided lots of...
That's true. You were quite good.
Ooh, lots of immediate stuff.
That's good stuff. look, I'm here to be professional.
Yeah?
I'm prepared to be interviewed.
Mike Skills.
Yes.
Our podcast went over quite well last week.
I am pretty happy with it.
I wasn't.
Yeah, David wasn't. He's got a new iPod. He moved in from the country just last week, and he got an iPod, which he's pretty happy with, I think. Although he's still curious about the play button.
No, how do they get the little people inside to sing the music?
To sing into his ear. I want to hear a tale about Amy's mother.
My mother purchased a mobile telephone, as one does, and it was one of the standard types that has wacky things, including an MP3 player. Mm. And my mother looked at me with big eyes and said, I know it's got a music player on it, Amy, but what if it doesn't have any songs that I like? And that is the story of my mother and modern technology.
Oh, I feel like I'm missing out on this party.
Oh, it's the place to be.
Yeah, this is the hot spot. Who's here?
Al's here, and he brought Ashley.
Oh, Al is trash.
Ashley Moore? No.
Ashley Hornschild.
Your boy? Oh, screwed up face.
No.
Ashley, you're on the outs, baby. Okay, cut that, Dan.
Very visual podcast.
No. I just mean Al has had a beverage or 7.
Oh, God, Al's drunk.
No, Al's...
Tell me he hasn't had rum.
Can we get Al in here?
Oh, yeah, Al we can. Be on.
No, I must say, Al is... He's destroyed, but he's happy, Al, which is good. Because... Oh, here he comes.
Here he comes.
He's in a good mood.
Doug! Al, you were sober when we last saw you. How are things going
now? Can you hold
now?
Two things at once? Okay, here's the mic.
Yeah.
Oh, what are we talking about at the moment?
Well, we're making fun of you.
Really?
So, man. Al, how did you get into Impro?
I started Impro because Dan started stand-up. Dan got me into stand-up and Dan got me into Impro. That's the way it is. He started 6 months before me, approximately.
No. Well, hang on. Stand-up?
Yeah, and
no, I started doing stand-up, and you were like, how did you do that? And you were up there 3 weeks after I was.
Really? Wasn't 6 months?
I stopped after 4 months, and you'd been doing it for months.
I was really close to starting stand-up, because I'd heard from, like, people at uni. I was very interested in doing stand-up.
Yes.
The point is, Impro maybe not so much.
Yeah.
But Dan started just before me.
Yeah.
And I started the classes at Anglican Grammar School, where I used to go to school, which was churchy.
But Al's not a... Like, churchy people.
No, I'm a complete
My brother went to church.
He's a
I'm Baptist.
I went to churchy.
So, we were talking about how you got into Impro. When Alistair started stand-up, Alistair's writing is superb, but his stage presence was god-fucking-awful.
Absolutely.
And I said, Alistair, you've got to get some more stage presence.
Yep.
Come along to Impro. Because it'll give you a sense of getting up on stage and rolling with the punches and dealing with surprising elements. And who would have thought that he'd still be doing Impro 8 years, 9, 10 years later and stealing my thunder? Fuck you, Al.
Impro is therapy for me. I'm basically Dan is correct. Absolutely, 100% correct on this. I am far more written in comedy than Dan is. Like, I write my jokes. I write my stuff. Dan is a performance person. He acts, he sings, he performs.
He takes his pants off.
He takes his pants off and his shirt off. He's absolutely correct. We've grown up together. I know Dan. Dan can do that shit. I, on the other hand, are far more written, far more straight-laced, far more rehearsed. So it's interesting that we came into the scene kind of together.
We're approaching it from the other end of the spectrum.
Yes, absolutely. We are polar opposites, yeah. Really.
You're trying to figure out how to perform the stuff, yeah. And I'm trying to figure out what to say.
Yes, I look at my performance now, even now, performing at the Arts Theatre, going, I can't act.
So, Alistair, what comedy have you grown up on? What's inspired you?
This is the thing. How much have
you had to drink?
I've had a lot.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a lot. It sounds like you went out to bankrupt your employers on alcoholically.
I'm not driving tonight.
Driving? You're barely walking tonight.
I'm barely speaking tonight. but basically, what was the question?
Comedy influences.
Comedy influences. Now, this is the thing. Like, a lot of people, I've done stand-up for a long time. A lot of people, like, who I do comedy with, watch the comedy channel and they watch comedy gigs. And
yes.
Yep.
What's your views on the comedy channel? I like them, and I hope that they give me a job in the future.
I actually like the comedy channel. I like... What are you playing for, Dave? Okay, I'm going to do Dave's version. I like watching bad comedy 5 times a day when they repeat it the same thing every time. I like when they make bad choices about prize winners. I like... Oh, wait a second. Oh, I get it. They're great.
Not that either.
No, they're... I can't find a line.
Okay, but here's the point with me.
Shouldn't have said anything.
Here's the point with me, which is probably different. I don't like to cast myself as unique, but in many ways...
You're
I...
not.
Sorry, I had to. We're all unique together.
In many ways, I am actually unique to other comedians.
Alice doesn't have a marijuana problem.
I don't have a marijuana problem.
I really would like to have a marijuana problem.
These motherfuckers.
Hang on. Excuse me.
Hello.
Hey, professionals.
To all 11 people in the room, bit of professionalism, please.
There's a man handing out candy in your
throat. Imagine there's an on-air light and it's on.
Make something of the fact that there's like 12 people in the room.
There are 12 people in the room. I've got to edit this motherfucker.
And introducing the grandmaster of impro. He's played but once, and it was shocking. But he continues to judge us. Simon the Fiend Feeney.
I played once that you've seen. I have played other times. Okay. Back in high school, you know, back when you were still... I was still judging back when you guys were starting, yeah.
You saw Michael and I when we were in grade 11.
Yep. Way back when you people were zygots, I was judging you even back then.
Really? Yes, but I was there, was I not?
You weren't zygote. You were, you know, short pants stage when I began judging everybody. So yeah, I was judging. But no, I first started attending impro in Brisbane in 1996 was when I first started going along to watch impro, and that was back when it was at Zane's under the Metro.
Dan got me into comedy, which was.
No, but what TV shows do you like?
This is a terrible question to ask because I never liked TV.
I'll have a mic now because Al doesn't need two.
I don't need two for this.
Well, of the modern age, do you watch any television programs? I mean, maybe not on TV, but do you watch any of them on the internet or?
No.
What comedy influences?
So you're completely pure and original.
I used to perform comedy with like all the comedians. The comedians always have their influences. They're like, oh, so-and-so, I'm Billy Goodley. But I never watched comedy. Never. I was like, no, I'd rather come up with my own ideas.
So has it paid off?
No, it hasn't. Uh-huh. I've ended up as a drunk degenerate in my parents' house.
No, that makes you a pretty sad comedian. But are your jokes original?
Yes. No one's ever come up with a mo joke.
You guys should totally fight.
No, Nadia agrees.
Okay, that's a joke, Al. Don't hit him, please.
Stop it, Al. Stop it. Oh, God.
Well, no. Al's...
All right, back to Mike. So, Mike, what comedy influences do you have?
You want Mike... Yeah, sorry. Yep, hold on.
Concentrate, focus.
Okay.
Comedy influences.
Comedy influences. Okay, well, look, my big sister...
Yes.
...is my comedy influence.
Ah.
But what that actually means is Monty Python.
Yeah.
The Young Ones.
Yes.
The Young Ones is 99% of everything I love.
I love The Young Ones.
The Young Ones is so fucking important to everything. I mean, nosing around. Do you remember that? I'm up here in the rafters because that's what nosing around is all about. Shock. Right. Yeah. Nosing around is everything. Oh, University Challenge. Oh. The Giant Eclair. No, look, The Young Ones was a big one for me. But modern shows, Mr. Show from America.
Oh, that's nice.
And Mitchell and Webb, Peep Show.
Yeah. Oh, Peep Show is very good.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's amazing. If anyone hasn't watched that, you really got to. It's all over the torrents. It's kind of like Seinfeld, kind of like Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's beautiful.
Yeah?
What else? I mean, 30 Rock's great. McAuliffe.
I've never seen 30 Rock.
You've never seen 30 Rock?
Never seen it.
You'd love that shit, man.
Yeah? I'll be all over it.
Look, it's kind of like Arrested Development meets Scrubs.
Ooh, that... Jesus Christ!
Yeah, I know. And it actually is that. It's great fun. Alec Baldwin is the man. Tina Fey is hilarious. It's... 30 Rock's great. What else do I love at the moment? I mean, The American Office is great. It really is.
I've seen bits in it. It looks quite good.
Start from the beginning. Season 1's a bit ropey.
Yeah.
Season 2 onwards is brilliant.
Yeah.
4's a bit ropey. Season 5's back on track. But so yeah, The American Office, The British Office. I mean, Australia has McAuliffe, which is great.
Yeah.
Chris Lilley's pretty good. I mean, Summer Heights is lovely.
Oh, okay. I've never really looked into that.
Jonah is such a wonderful character.
Okay.
Skid House is a bit shonk, and Comedy Inc's a bit shonk.
Oh, yeah.
Fast Forward has its moment. Like, Australia's been on a downhill slope. Sarah Silverman is great.
I've been enjoying The Hollow Men.
A couple of episodes of Sam, I like Hollow Men. It's not particularly funny,
yeah,
but I like watching it.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's kind of like a poor man's Frontline.
My curiosity with Working Dog is that they just rip off other people. Like, Frontline is brilliant. Frontline is amazing. 39 episodes of amazing TV, but they made it just after Larry Sanders' show, and I have to wonder how much they ripped off.
But that third season's a bit ropey.
Look, I watched it when I was 16, and I still loved it. But The Hollow Men is very similar to The Thick of It, a British TV show by Amando Iannucci.
Yeah.
And also, he's made a sketch show called The Amando Iannucci Shows, which is excellent. He also made Steve Coogan. What's that show called? And what's that Steve Coogan show? Alan Partridge. He made Alan Partridge. Along with Chris Morris is a huge fan. I love Chris Morris. He's amazing, like Brass Eye and Nathan Barley and The Day Today. And as has been made very clear, the Sex Detective Boys are comedy nerds to the max. We are comedy nerds to the max. Hi, Dave.
So,
look, Sexy Detective, I think, are very strong. I think they're growing. Well, Dave's being phased out.
Yes, I was sick of that bastard.
No, look, I think Sexy Detective are very strong, if only because they believe in things.
Yeah.
And they commit to things.
How so?
And they're growing and they're challenging themselves.
Shameless self-promotion.
Hey. Look, you're on our side, girlfriend. Look, it seems that the Impro Mafia people are very nervous of Sexy Detective because they feel that we might get somewhere, which is very encouraging.
I don't see that myself, but you think they're going to overtake?
I've had specific conversations with people who are like, take us with you. And look, it won't. If it does happen, then I will make sure that my limbs are clear of the vessel so that they can't grab on.
Continue, Michael. I want to know what you think makes a strong impro scene. What are the integral ingredients that you need for a good impro scene?
For a good impro scene, well, I think...
Even if it's a scene that goes for 30 seconds.
Good question, Jonah, well asked. Well, Jonah, I think the important qualities for a strong impro scene...
Sure.
Commitment between the players.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you need to establish a strong base of reality. And it doesn't have to be reality based on our world, but reality based on the character's world.
Sure.
And then I think you need to mix it up and to change.
How so?
Patty Styles is one of the best people in the world about saying encouraging things about improv. And she will often talk about
how the best improv comes from redefining the boundaries, because improv is about doing things that have never been done before.
Yeah.
Because what point is there to improvise unless you're breaking down things and doing things you've never done before?
Yeah, yeah.
And so
yeah,
she's all about challenging yourself and about doing something original. And it's not a matter of saying that she has perfected that, because she hasn't.
Nobody can.
That anyone has.
Yeah.
But aiming towards that is such a lovely, noble goal.
How do you aim towards that with a group like our own, who has been so familiarized with each other and know each other so well? How do you go into each night saying, I'm going to do a show that has, or even a scene that's never been done before?
Well, there's two ends to that, and it's such a hard thing to do, but I think we can build on this. The fact that we know each other so well does mean that we tend to repeat ourselves.
Yeah.
But it also means that we have a strong respect and confidence and security with each other.
Which so means, we're likely to more do
which
do
means
stuff
we trust each other enough to support each other if we do something quite unique.
Sure. Yeah.
Can I ask, did Big Sexy make it onto the podcast?
Yeah, yeah, he was
How
second.
How did he go?
He's always wonderful. Big Sexy is one of my favourites. Big Sexy is... Natalie and Big Sexy are my favourite guests to have on.
What about me, huh?
You're very good.
Yeah, I'm good, am I?
You're a lot of work. You put a lot of ums in, and it's a fair bit of editing when you're
I say on. Like a lot, don't I?
It's a, like an um.
It's like, like...
Yeah, there's a lot of it. So it's a lot of work.
Yeah,
it's always worthwhile.
If you can't record with Valley Girl, then... Hey, hold on, go to say for a second. You're basing my quality based on the amount of editing you have to do. What about the talent behind it and the intrinsic value of the words?
I can't judge
the words. Okay, back to our alternate host.
Mike, I'm pretty impressed with your effort so far.
Like, thanks.
Is that out?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's 3:25, and accomplished improviser Alistair Crawford is now vomiting. Mike Griffin, thanks for joining us on End Time. Could you move the mic along to Simon Feeney?
Look,
please?
No, I'd love to.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ibrahim Mafia's favourite judge, Simon Feeney.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much.
Simon, thank you for joining us.
Well, there's a party. Of course I've joined you.
Yes, indeed. Although you did take off for a while and you came back
there
covered
was another
in
party.
Spots.
I turned up for the first party. I went away to the second party. And now I've come back to the repeat of the first party, which is my third party, my third gathering for the evening. And it's been quite good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, you have been a supporter of Impro in Brisbane for an extremely long time.
I first got dragged along by a friend to one of the shows at the Metro at Zane's for Underground Theatre Sports.
Wow, that's old school. That's before my time.
That's well and truly before your time, and most of the people playing nowadays, actually. Tom Dunstan was probably one of the players that I saw back then, who is still playing frequently.
I know that Liam was at Zane's for a little while too.
He was back.
He turned up just before me.
Just before we made the change over, Zane's kicked them out and they went, we need a new venue. Hey, we've heard about that funky place called The Hub.
The Hub Cafe.
Let's see if we can get it in there. Hub Internet Cafe. Glory days, glory days.
Not only did you provide everyone with a place to do impro, but you end up with a job there.
I had the job there to start with, actually.
Really?
I got the job at the end of 1995.
Yeah.
And then when I was footloose and fancy free after finishing university, I ran into a bunch of old friends and they dragged me along to Impro. And we also had, after just recently starting up Impro, the Internet Cafe, we had Mr. Walduck and Ms. McCauley turning up and asking if they could put on a show.
Monster Bunny,
they wanted to put on a show called The Y-Files.
I've heard great things about that.
The Y-Files was a fantastic example of how to rip off what's in the current gestalt meme identity of the universe and present it as brand new and original impro.
It's called something. The Zygote? No. Not
Zeitgeist.
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 Yes.
So, yeah, no, they managed to come along and they put on the show and it took off in a great, fantastic way. And probably about 8 months later, it was well and truly into 96 that Zane's decided that they didn't need any of this impro stuff taking up their valuable table space on a Thursday evening. So the move went to The Hub.
On a Tuesday night?
First it was a Thursday night. Because we still had Monster Bunny on the Tuesday night. And eventually that switched over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, eventually Monster Bunny finally closed down their show after Mr. Mark Buckingham left to go overseas for a little while.
Yeah.
And eventually they just felt that the idea for the show had run its course and they were done with it for a little while. So they made the switch over. And Six of the Best leapt into the Thursday night slot, taking up with Stickmen Presents and any number of different shows, The Share House.
Doll Diaries,
that was the one, yes. And some other shows of ilk. Each member of Six of the Best would become the director for a particular show, yep. And they would put forward their ideas.
Yep.
So you'd have Brad putting forward musical ideas, or he put forward a Cthulian horror story show,
yep.
Which lasted about 3 weeks. And, yeah, eventually they started putting out ideas, wanting ideas from other people about other shows that they could put on there. And that's
finally
when a lot
someone
of people
did Dodgy Squad.
Dodgy Squad, yes, yes.
And
I remember that back in the
was
day.
Where Mr. Dan Beeston showed up on the scene and started watching.
And thinking, hey, I can do that better than these guys.
Well, I did that half the time, and the rest of the time I was like, geez, that Justin Waldock's fucking good.
Yeah, I do miss Mr. Waldock stepping onto the platform stage, as it were.
Treading the boards?
Not so much the boards, especially back in those days. It was the carpeted...
Treading the sponge?
Two centimeter stage platform that we have carpeted just so that way people could actually pretend that they're elevated above the people sitting down.
And it was a tiny stage, but it weighed a fucking ton. It was like
it was
made out of sheet metal or something.
Oh, no.
Captain No do that? Ivan Matula built that, didn't he?
He might have. I know that it was actually put together first by Monster Bunny.
There was a Monster Bunny stage, which was the big black stage, but there was the...
No, I thought that was the Six of the Best stage.
The Six of the Best stage was the tiny little...
Six of the Best were the ones who put together the big black stage.
No, maybe you're right about that.
And Y-Files put together the small raised platform, which they donated to us, so that way we could use it for bands or anything. Any other time we had any supporting event or band coming through, just
that was
people
a tiny stage.
It was a tiny stage, and you always feared because people were always going to walk back into one of the paintings that were hanging
expensive
on that side wall. Expensive artwork that had been put on display for sale, and you could always rely on one scene a night, someone going, I'm backing away from what's going on, and I'll throw myself against the wall. Ooh.
I'm pretty sure I've done that at least once.
But then when we moved to... Well, it's difficult. I always do think of it as underground impro, no matter what, when it's one of those sorts of shows. So.
Yeah.
When it made the move to the Pig and Whistle over at Indrapilli,
yep.
We then had that huge mirror behind the stage as well.
In the atrium,
in the nice glassy, the tree growing.
That was
everywhere.
Creepy. It was like performing in the middle of a room where your doppelganger was behind you making fun of you.
And you were about to walk into it and knock it free from the wall.
Oh, yes.
And if you thought that paintings could be expensive, mirrors that size and that elaborate, oh my God.
Yeah.
Remember those nights when that went really well? We had like 50 people watching you in the
atrium.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I remember there have been many nights. Every venue has had at least one good night. I remember there were nights where you went to the Hub and you'd actually have standing room only in the Hub as people were getting ready for different shows that
were
going on.
Fun.
And you'd have all these people. You'd have like three people actually there to use the computers, and they'd all hide up in the very back corner because every other available seat was taken and being used by people who were watching the show. And no, those nights were great. Those nights were fantastic. And yeah, at the atrium, there were nights where, especially if we were doing a particular competition, if we let people know that it was a competition night, we could get crowds of up to 40, 50 people turning up.
Yeah, I remember those nights.
Crowds would go raucous, absolutely. They really liked it. And it is one of those things whereby the energy that the crowd brings to the show is such an important part. And I know some troops have had the standing rule that if you have less people in the audience than you have on stage, then the show doesn't go on.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. And I can see why people really, really want the big crowds.
Yeah.
But at the same time, impro is something that you're trying to achieve. And if you're just going to treat... I've known other troops that have gone, you know, we've only got two people in the audience, let's treat it as a jam. Let's go through and see where we can work, where we can improve, and let's see what we're doing. And with this way as well, we can get instant feedback from the... Because it's the hardcore. It's always a hardcore crowd who are there no matter what. Yeah.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that Wade addresses it from the point of view that if two people turn up to a show where six people are playing, if you don't do a good show for those two people, they're not coming back.
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's the case. Unless, of course, you know, they are the hardcore crowd who it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they'll
Wednesday night is their night, and I don't care, it's a fantastic show, yeah. I love these people. They're great.
Look at Emily Witherspoon. She was a crazed fan down at the Satchmo's.
Yeah, but we know what she was a crazed fan of.
Well, then she hooked up with Troy Baker. And
as I was saying.
Now she lives with with the greatest improviser of all time.
And so when does she come out to improv shows nowadays?
When Troy plays.
And how often is that?
Never.
So what was she a fan of? Was she a fan of improv or was she a fan of something else?
Cock.
That's one descriptor. We are talking, after all, of the God of Banging.
God of Banging!
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Natalie Bohensky.
Hello. I'm going to do my best impression of Al. Yeah, so impro is just really great and, you know, well, I was drinking to excess for most of the 1990s. How much of this are you actually going to use?
Oh, I'm hoping like
60. Dan is putting both of his hands around his head. I don't know if it was a wise idea to podcast. It's been very popular, the podcasting.
Yeah, everyone's been having a wonderful time. So I'm glad that it's been very popular. And people are going to be very disappointed when they're like, he cut my entire bit out and the 2 hours surrounding it.
Now, I think the best possible solution is that you do the actual podcast. When people go, like, you cut out my entire bit, send them their entire bit so they can listen to it and they can go, oh, thank God he cut that out. I sounded so drunk. Oh, my God.
There are a lot of very drunk people here at 3:36 a.m.
Have you been doing time calls? During?
No.
A little bit towards the end, but, well, people have been getting trashter and trashter.
Trashter and trashter.
Including myself.
How much of the Merlot have you been drinking? And second part of that question, do you need a top-up?
Number one, slightly too much. Slightly too. Mead is a difficult term. I should probably have a big glass of water before I have a crack at another glass of Merlot.
Let me get you a big glass of water then as you communicate in Fiend speak.
So, Feeny, how did you end up getting into impro in the first place?
Back in my heady days of youth, I was living out at Charleville, and they put to air on ABC Theatre Sports.
Oh.
It received one season. It was hosted by Paul Chubb. He was the MC. And
Paul Chubb?
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
I love that guy.
You had something, it started off with something
was
like...
Wasn't he in a sitcom where the house was a spaceship?
Watch This Space. He was Rufus the Space Alien.
Genius. Fucking genius.
It was fantastic. And back when they made good Australian television. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that... He was gangbusters.
Silly Season Cinema. He was all over the place, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, they started with something like 36 teams, and the season itself went for a ridiculous period. Like half the year, the season 36 ran.
36 teams.
Yeah, it was down in Melbourne. They had people tell me, I can't remember quite that well, but people tell me that Andrew Denton was one of the team members teams back then. I can't recall that. I do recall that the first time I ever saw Andrew Denton was on the very first episode of Blah 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 that went to air. But the show itself, it put in a lot of the things for me that I still love about impro, and particularly the short form games. You had three judges, and there was always the two nice judges, and then you had the hanging judge. And the hanging judge wore a mask, wore an actual executioner's hood.
You want one of them, don't you?
I don't require an executioner's hood. I like it when people hate me and know who I am. The hanging judge had pretty much the highest score he ever really gave. He was worse than Rhode Simon, seriously. He gave usually about a 2, maybe a 3 if it was fantastic. But most games got out of 5.
Yeah.
Out of 5, but no, it was usually down in the realms of the 0, 1, 2, and 3 maybe. Very rarely do I recall seeing a 4 or a 5. Theatre Sports, and there were some fantastic scenes there. People played with the camera, having the camera there to be able to play with. I saw one of the best murder endowments ever, where someone had to kill a member of his own team using a camel in a museum.
Nice.
And, of course, to highlight exactly how well he was in on it, he actually went over to the camera, brought it up, and after everybody had dropped their hints, and no one was really sure of what he was about to do, went over to the camera and went, I'm not sure how I can kill someone in a museum with a camel, but I'm going to give it a go. And then proceeded to make the camel sneeze, so that way it opened its mouth and closed it over the over the neck of the person he was meant to murder. Truly a magic moment in my mind from that very, very tender age of me watching back then. And then when Charvel High School had a troupe come through who were doing theatre sports training. And I went, ooh, yes, I'm up for that. And went through the course and performed a few times out there. And then came back to Sunshine Coast and then eventually Brisbane for university studies. Didn't think about it for a while. And when I turned up to my first impro show, it was like, oh, I know this. This is fantastic. I know exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd numbers varied back then, but also attendee of performers varied as well. So there'd be some nights whereby, because no one was getting paid, you're not sure if anyone even got a free meal. I think maybe you got a free drink if you turned up and played at scenes. But people came along, and some nights I'd be there to just watch, just going to like, oh, cool, I can hang around and I can watch. And you'd actually have maybe three people there to perform, and they'd go to like, oh, no, we need more people turning up so that way we can draft them in for the night. And one of the people turned to me and said, you know the games, you know what's going on, get up here.
Oh.
At which point, Ms. McCauley said, no, he hasn't done our workshops, a.k.a. he hasn't paid his $90 to do the workshops. He doesn't get to come up on stage, which I believe is something that's going to be happening with Impro Mafia in the coming year. The fact that if you have not paid your membership, you do not get to play in an Impro Mafia show.
If you haven't paid the membership, you haven't paid, but membership's $10 a year.
Exactly, exactly.
But then if you haven't done the workshops, I don't know, yeah, it depends.
Well, that'll definitely be part of it.
If you haven't done the workshops, you may not be practiced at how to do Impro. Mm. If you can prove that you can do Impro, you probably get in and be able to play.
It helps if it's someone like, say, for example, the fabulous Tom Dunstan.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to go through a rookie course any time soon.
So there was a fellow from Canada who came by, and we threw him on stage that night when he turned up to watch because we had one player short.
But I remember those nights.
It's a quality thing. You need to have a certain amount of quality to get on stage.
You'd like to think so, yes.
Ooh.
Well, nice. No, this was not a personal attack against you, Mr. Beeston. No. This is just sometimes you have players who feel they've paid their membership, they've done the courses, they should be allowed to get up there and perform. Mm-hmm. And depending on the venue, yes, they should absolutely be allowed to get up there and perform so that way they can learn, in which case it's always good to have positive feedback and constructive criticism and someone who's there to deliver it to them, someone who's watching the show. I'm very glad to have seen Wade at the last show, which was pretty much all rookie players. Seeing then, every game he was taking notes on who was involved in the scene and what it was that they were doing, and that's fantastic.
Mm.
That is what a rookie show nowadays needs.
Yes, and what we missed out on.
In some regards, yeah.
When we moved to the Pig and Whistle, we sort of ended up in the wilds.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You guys were cut and dried and thrown aside by the core of Impro in Brisbane and left to fend for yourselves. You didn't have the coaches, you didn't have the trainers coming up and seeing how people were doing at that stage and seeing where people could improve, where people were...
We're getting no feedback.
You're getting no feedback whatsoever from the core players of the old guard, who would still, though, they would send out occasionally a missive. This is from my understanding. They would occasionally send out a missive saying, we need one more for lightning doubles. Is it possible that we can grab one of you guys?
It wasn't from us, I don't think. Maybe Greg.
No, well, even at the, back at that point, maybe Greg. But even as time went on, I mean, I know that various other players have since been up on stage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Wade and Mike and Dave have been invited on.
But
and
how did that happen?
Invited on?
Almost invited on. But how did that occur? Who was the one who... did someone come along and see the show and then go, you guys are ready? Come on up.
No, Kirsten hadn't seen us play for years and then she called us up because she was desperate for someone because they'd run out of players.
Mm. No, it's definitely the case that you guys were left cut and dried and left to fend for yourselves because they had to focus on what was important to them at that time.
Yep.
Which was having the players that they wanted doing the shows that they wanted. And there were a whole bunch of other financial complaints at the time, which meant that they having to take it out of their own time and their own money to come and travel and visit the shows for things that they were not involved with per se anymore just became a drain for them, which is why they unfortunately didn't come along. But at the same time, there were people there offering advice. There were people there who offered some criticism. And quite often people would either take it on board and go like, oh, no,
was that you?
I could name myself in this regard. And then there'd be other people who'd go, he hasn't been on stage in years. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Why should we pay any attention to what he has to say? Like, well, because I've watched an awful lot. I have played. I do know what the rules are. And I do have a
You're a bit
problems.
Of a stickler for the rules, though.
Oh, I'm a fan of the rules, absolutely. Yeah. Like, if you can break the rules creatively, excellent. If you break the rules just because you're bored of the rules, not my bag.
See, sometimes you break the rules because you forget about the rules and you end up creating an amazing story anyway. And that's Simon's true. The sort of person who'll go, well, you know what? You broke the fucking rules. 0 fucking points.
0 points, absolutely. Hanging judge technique right there. Just because you went, wow, we did fantastically, doesn't mean that you did it right.
So what comedy influences did you have?
Oh, from the very early days, I suppose The Goodies was an essential part of my childhood.
Excellent.
And from there, it grew up through various other television and media. And Bill Cosby, actually. Bill Cosby was the first stand-up album that I
ever
purchased.
Not the first I've heard of Bill Cosby tonight.
And from there, no, I got more and more involved in stand-up. Always interesting for me. I become aware of comedy not just through what I encounter, but other friends have always found that seeing I do like a good laugh every now and then, they will make the recommendations.
Yep.
Like, you know, of course, Monty Python back in the day. But other friends who went, you should listen to this.
Yep.
And I'll sit there and I'll listen to the album of music by Tom Lehrer and go, my God, this is fantastic. He's clever. He's witty. He's everything that you never thought an American could be in song. I can't get enough of this stuff.
Yep.
And, of course, you know, Weird Al you encounter through pop culture and you experience things like that. But it's the things that you encounter just passing along or through recommendation that I've always found I get the most of interest out of. If someone recommends something to me and then I go, oh, okay, I'll go have a listen to this. Wow, no, that's pretty good. I will then go out and try to get as much of that person as possible.
Yeah.
So that way I can see what's going on, which is why nowadays stand-up comedians like, well, of course, back in the early 90s when impro was going on everywhere, Bill Hicks was the stand-up comedian of choice.
Yes.
And nowadays I'm listening to people like Doug Stanhope. I'm going back and re-listening through a lot of the early work of George Carlin. And
oh, George Carlin.
The early... I've managed to score a few CDs of Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
Not Lenny Henry, although Lenny Henry is a fine stand-up in his own right, but Lenny Bruce's material, and even managed to find some rare MP3s of Mr. Woody Allen back when he did nothing but stand-up, long before he became a screenwriter, screenmaker, etc., etc., back when he was working in advertising and just wrote jokes. And some of those jokes are amazingly funny, especially when you put them in comparison to some of his later films. They're just amazing. He's just got such a quick wit back then, but now he's gone off into a different area. It's one of those things where people burn out of comedy. It's John Cleese. John Cleese, back in the 80s and 90s, just started going, look, this isn't funny anymore. I wrote so many jokes, and you're doing it as a point of satire. You're trying to make people realize what you're making fun of, and all people do is laugh. They don't actually make the changes that you're trying to indicate that they need to change through comedy. The world's going to hell in a handbasket. Screw you all. I'm not being funny anymore. But now he needs a paycheck every now and then because he's had so many different divorces from so many different people.
Oh, yes.
And which
he's
is
a big
why
fan of the divorces.
Oh, well, he's a big fan of the ladies, which is why he ends up being a big fan of the divorces.
Ah, yes.
One of the shows that was going to air in England when I was last there was basically they had wacky gadgets and patented ideas as presented by John Cleese. He was an MC host for a crap reality kind of TV show, including such things as the one they love to advertise on the tube was the Beer Stalker. Instead of the foam dome, the American foam dome, no, you had a Deer Stalker hat with cup holders so that way it could hold two beers. So you had the Beer Stalker. Sherlock Holmes would have been proud, I'm sure.
Ah, yes. Sherlock Holmes is always proud.
Well, except when he was, you know, gone on cocaine and rum and
it helped him deduce things.
It helped him deduce how to play that damn violin.
It was
and he never said that. He never said elementary, my dear Watson. He said elementary, and he'd refer to my dear Watson, but he never said the phrase at the one time. See, so this has gone all too literary and off the topic here now.
So this is like the yell, alas, poor Yorick. I knew him well.
Horatio.
No, a man of infinite never said well. Said, I knew him, Horatio.
I knew him, Horatio. That is correct.
There you go. Do you know what? At 3:52 a.m.
You're jack of this, aren't you now?
I have two words to say to you, Simon Feeney.
And time!
You have been listening to pretty much everyone from Impro Mafia. You can check out
all of the exciting things happening in Impro Mafia at impromafia.com. We'll be starting up all of our shows pretty quickly, so keep an eye on the website. Thank you very much to all our guests tonight. Thanks again to David Peachy, who has done such a marvelous job on our Impro Mafia tune. He designed it in the first place and then created an amazing job on the final cut. Thank you very much to Matt, who's also been our musician all year and done a great job. Thank you to everyone who supported us. And thank you to Dan Beeston, who's been doing all of this and does all the editing. Did you have something to say?
You mad bastard. And just by the way, to remind you, you suck.
Dun 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 dun. Come along to the Art Theatre on New Year's Eve to see our show 2008. Thank God It's Gone, despite my pleas not to copy Thank God You're Here. Nat has decided to go with that. Also, in mid-January, I know I'm going to pay for that,